Good morning, welcome to Emmett Audio. As you probably suspect, I listen to a lot of podcasts while I am working, because spoon carving and listening to a conversation is a really good match. Especially, I've tried listening to audiobooks, and there's something about that that's almost puts me to sleep. It's not as interesting as two people actually having a conversation. And so the current availability of high-end conversations between people in podcast form is really a blessing to my work. It keeps me engaged mentally and thinking about things other than what I'm doing, while at the same time giving me the space to focus on my work. And yesterday I was listening to a great conversation between Andrew Huberman, who's a neuroscientist at Stanford, and Casey Means, who was an ear, nose, and throat surgeon before she got disenchanted with the Western-style medical system, and started thinking about the upstream source of many of the problems that she was seeing, which has to do with our mitochondria and the way that we do or don't create energy in our lives and the functioning of those mitochondria. I'm not going to get into her whole thing, but she has a new book out called Good Energy. It's all about mitochondria and human health that I think I'm going to buy. I just heard about it yesterday, but I think it's one of the next books I'm going to buy. At any rate, Andrew and Casey there's a paradigm that they articulated, but they didn't articulate in a condensed enough way that I wanted to share it here. In the hopes that it sticks in our heads a little bit better. So one of the things they were saying in this 3-hour conversation was, look, our exercise, you're not getting the same thing from your exercise if you sit all day long and then you do, you know, 1 hour heavy workout in the gym. That doesn't give you the same physiological effects as simply building physical activity into your whole day, right? So if you were to take that 1 hour of exercise and divide it up into 10 smaller chunks, you would have a much stronger effect on your body. And so we fool ourselves as a culture into thinking that it's all right that I sit on the subway into work and I sit at a desk all day and then I sit at home on the couch because I'm getting my hour of exercise in. When really that's having not nearly as big an impact as if you walked the dogs every morning and afternoon and just had some distance that you had to walk between, say, going to the bathroom and, or going for lunch, or this is why New Yorkers who have to walk much more than most people are in better shape than most other people in the U.S. In certain metrics, because that amount of walking built up and sort of broken up into smaller chunks is much more effective than in places where they might do as much exercise, but it's consolidated into a workout at a gym, and the rest of your day is sedentary. Okay, so that's part one. Exercise is better off dispersed, disaggregated. Let me look at the... Now, and then, you know, about an hour later, after they're talking about other things, they were talking about eating. And Casey was saying how the average American eats 11 times a day. And we have snack after snack after snack. We have our three meals, but then we are constantly grazing throughout the day, and that is a problem because it's constantly raising our, here I'm gonna stray into areas that I don't have solid underfoot. It's constantly raising our glucose levels. When we eat, our body needs to deal with that food that we're eating. And so it's constantly, sort of giving us more to deal with and more to deal with. And it's like someone stopping in and putting more paperwork on your desk every hour instead of having, three meals a day, being sort of, say, somebody not doing that. Now imagine having your regular work day and then having somebody stop by every hour and saying, oh, can you just deal with this? Can you just deal with this? Can you just deal with this? And it's like you're constantly being pulled to deal with the latest thing. And so what she was saying was, look, it's good for us to go periods of time without eating. Doesn't mean fasting is necessary, although there are benefits that come with different forms of fasting. But simply giving your body periods of time when you're not eating is really helpful. And it's helpful in a number of ways. Ooh, there's a coyote down the road. It just ran into the woods. Okay. The dogs are back there. That's good. Interesting. So here's the paradigm that I think was not articulated, which is I think that we need to, like, a good way to think about it is that we should space out our exercise and we should consolidate our eating, which as a culture is the opposite of what we've done. We have spaced out our eating and we've consolidated our exercise. And that shift in pattern lies at the root of much of our problems. Now, obviously, it's not everything. And what we eat matters tremendously. And I'm not going to get into that here. Because what I want to focus on is this pattern of, if you were to look at your life, wherever you are, whatever your pattern is, and you were to say, okay, how could I space out my exercise more? And how could I consolidate my eating more? Right? For me, I looked at my life and I thought, okay, pretty good on this account already, because for the last bunch of years, I've been on this journey of thinking through my patterns and trying to change some things to get a different health outcome. And it's worked. I'm in much better shape now than I was 4 years ago. It's been an up and down journey. But at this moment, I feel like I've figured out a bunch of things and I've sort of been doing them for long enough that I am in much better shape. Now, even in that circumstance, I could look at my life and say, okay, if I apply this pattern of space out my exercise and consolidate my eating, what does that mean? Well, it means that I should definitely continue with the kettlebell workouts in the morning that I've been doing with my daughter, even after waiting for the school bus is done. Right, a couple mornings a week, do a 5-minute set of exercises in the morning, and then I have the daily exercises that I do at noon, and I have my dog walks, and sometimes I wear a ruck pack. Sometimes I don't. But one other thing that occurred to me that I could do is, right now I tend to go the short way up to my workshop and the short way down. And if I just went the long way over by the chicken coop, that would give me a little bit more walking each day. I go back and forth multiple times a day. And there's no reason why I couldn't just go the longer way. Especially this time of year. No snow on the ground. It's a delight to walk past the berry bushes and the fruit trees. I should just do that. And then when it comes to consolidating my eating, well, currently, it works out that I often drink my coffee first, and then there's a lag time, then I have breakfast. But actually, since these French exchange students have been here, it's been a more typical pattern. Ah, it's actually not just since the French exchange students were here. It's since my younger daughter went on a sleepaway field trip. So then instead of waiting to eat with her, I've been eating with everybody else, which means that I have my coffee and my food all at once. That's a consolidation. And then really trying to cut down on the times that I eat late at night. So last night, I decided to stay up and watch a TV show, White Collar, that I'm quite enjoying. But I ended up eating some food when I was staying up. And my body let me know as I went to sleep that we did not appreciate that. Did not feel good to my body. Now, mentally, it felt good to eat. But that late night snacking is really bad for you. It prevents you from having as deep a sleep because your body has to digest. The digestion doesn't go as well. It's essentially, those calories are much more easily turned into fat than other calories. It doesn't really matter what you eat. If you're eating late at night, it is more readily turned into fat on your body because of where your hormone levels are and then therefore what your body does with that food. So I know this, and one of the things that I've done that's been very helpful has been to basically cut out that kind of late night eating. I did it last night because I decided I wanted to, but when I think about it, really, I don't want to. And I don't want to for that reason, that it's been really helpful not to. Now, the thing that I know that it's going to be hard is I love seedless watermelon. I don't like seeded watermelon. That's an abomination. A seedless watermelon eaten with a fork off a plate. Now, hear me out. It's actually my favorite food. Now, in the past, what's happened is I've enjoyed eating that at night after everyone's gone to bed. Well, that's a pattern that I need to disrupt in myself. That I've built this pleasurable ritual of everyone goes to bed, I have some watermelon and watch some TV. That needs to be disrupted. And if I want the watermelon, I eat it at lunchtime, say. Now, I've already, with eating much more meat, with making sure that my protein needs are topped up first, I've already basically eliminated the need for snacking. Occasionally, if I work hard, if I've got a full day of axing or something like that, axing out spoon blanks, I will be done working and I'll think, you know, I better have like a banana before I go walk the dogs because I feel really depleted. But generally speaking, if I do a better job of balancing what I'm doing, I don't need to snack at all during the day. And so then that late night pattern of snacking, not because I'm hungry, but because it's a pleasurable tradition, is something that I need to change. And I haven't been facing it because it hasn't been watermelon season, but boy, last night, whew, that half a watermelon in the fridge was calling my name. So, I think this paradigm, putting aside all the things of needing to focus on what you eat, but just this paradigm, and it's all interconnected, right? So you might find it hard to consolidate what you eat, or when you eat, until you change what you eat. So, well, let me lay that out a little. I discovered that I was severely under-proteined, especially as I started to exercise more, and I felt really crappy. And I talked to some friends of mine who were more knowledgeable about this, and they said, man, you need to check your protein intake. I'm guessing you have way less than you need, and that's why you feel crappy. And they were right. When I roughly kept track of how much I was having, my assumptions about how much protein I needed were about half of what I actually needed. And when I increase my protein intake to the target, which for me is 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight. Now that's not what I weigh now, so it's less. But even so, that's double the amount of protein that I was actually getting. You know, to get that amount of protein, if you're not prioritizing protein at every meal, you're just not going to get it. And what I found when I started having protein at every meal, and I was really saying, okay, well, let me start with the protein and then build the rest of the meal around it. What I found was that I just wasn't hungry the rest of the day, right? And I wasn't hungry for a lot of the crap that I was otherwise eating. And so that's been very helpful. It's been very helpful in cleaning up my diet and letting go of many of the processed foods that remained in my diet. And so, dispersing exercise, consolidating eating, I think is a really helpful framework to look at your life through and think about how can I shift this pattern, which for most of us is not helping us be healthy. And step by step, we make ourselves healthier. Thank you for listening. Talk tomorrow.